Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everybody, Levins here, just letting you know that this episode of The Mitchin is brought to you by me, specifically my 5 podcasts, one of which you are about to listen to. But did you know I have other podcasts? They are Serious Issues, of course, The Mitchin, All the Small Games, Hey Fam, and Old Raps, podcasts that are about comic books and pop culture and video games and rap music. It's a very broad spectrum. Of course, The Mitchin is about food. And I'm letting you know about all of them because I am releasing an episode of each of those podcasts this week. That's right, 5 episodes of Levin's hosted podcasts coming to you this week. All those podcasts are available on iTunes and Podcatcher and Overcast and Stitcher. Wherever you get your podcasts from, it should be there. So please, if you've ever, you know, given any thought to listening to some of my other podcasts but haven't made the jump yet, this is a great week to do that because I'm going to be giving away a part of a secret message before every one of the episodes. And I gave away one yesterday in Serious Issues. And today you're going to get the second part of that secret message. And that secret message is the word Mixcloud. So do with that what you will. And keep listening to all my podcasts this week for the full reveal of the full secret message, which you'll be rewarded with something at the end of it. The secret word is Mixcloud. Anyway, enjoy the episode, the long-awaited return episode of The Mitchin.
It's The Mitchin Podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Mitchin, a food podcast, which is annual at this point. We almost made it to an entire year since the last episode. Fine. My name's Andrew Levins. Joining me in the guest seat, my co-host seat, my good friend Mitchell Orr.
What's up, Levs?
It's good to be back with you. As everyone knows, we've not seen each other since August last year.
It feels like it sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
It does.
It's hard. I mean, part of why I do so many podcasts, which is at this point 5, yeah, is so I can maintain friendships.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I'm going to put forward maybe we should, you know, continue this in some way, just to hang out.
Once every 3 months.
Or something like, yeah, that. Yeah. I was going to say annual, but sure, we can do it. So this is a podcast about food, restaurants, being a chef, being in the food industry. We started this podcast, I want to say 4-ish years ago, three and a half years ago.
Fuck.
Long time ago. How many episodes did we get in?
We cracked 50, didn't we?
We got pretty close to 100.
Yeah.
Admirable.
Yeah, not a bad effort.
You know, we've spoken to a lot of chefs and people in the food industry that we, you know, call our friends or we've kind of become friendlier with because of this podcast. 72 episodes. Pretty good. So this will be the 73rd episode of the podcast, and I do a bunch of other podcasts about pop culture and
get your
rap.
Plugs in, bro. Get your plugs in.
So we started this in August 2015. So I mean, that's almost 3 years.
Shit.
You know, I'll post about them on social media, and the fucking for almost a year now, instead of people going, "Hey, I'm excited about this new podcast,"
like,
the only comments is, "Hey, what happened to The Mitchin? Where's The Mitchin? Where's The Mitchin? Where's The Mitchin?"
I get that all the time. Still, people come into the restaurant. "Hey, we miss The Mitchin. When's it coming back? What are you doing? Blah blah blah." So, thanks for the support.
Yeah, I guess we never intended for it to fully die. We definitely we burnt out on it. We kind of, if you've been listening from the start, we definitely had like a long break already. And then we came back with, the really good guys over at the projects offering some extra support, trying to do the video thing.
It became work.
Exactly. Exactly. And I guess this is like the one podcast, like, you know, the other ones I do are like about music and about comic books and like things that come out regularly that I enjoy for fun.
You're indulging in.
And then I talk about for fun. Whereas this was like, fuck, what are we going to talk about this week?
Yeah.
You know, and if you were listening to the ones last year, I was proud of them. It was like almost like a morning show with you and me talking about.
That became the hard thing. Did anything happen this week?
Yeah.
What the fuck are we going to talk about?
What dumb article did the Telegraph publish this week?
Who are we going to get to come and talk to us? Is anyone available? Can anyone be bothered? Can anyone get the time off work? And just setting it up became a ball ache.
But if we didn't put the work in and we got a guest or whatever, without the topics that we were that we came to, you know, prepared to talk about, it would always divulge into like quite negative, like just us complaining about the food industry.
And I think that's a reflection of where we were, or where I was maybe more so at the time. With everything going on, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, if I started this podcast while I still had a restaurant, it would be the most negative podcast on the internet. Because that's like, you know, that was like, I think, you know, if anyone that knows me very well, like, I'm a pretty optimistic and positive guy. But I think the closest point in my life that I maybe got close to having some kind of depression, or at least was in a really bad funk, was that last year of having a restaurant and a kid at the same time and being away from my son. Running the restaurant, hating every second of it. And you know, these are things that happen if you are in any line of work, I guess, but particularly when you run your own business that happens to be in the food industry, like, you know, it's no secret that you put a lot more in than you get out of this industry.
I hope it's not a secret.
I thought today we could have a general catch up.
Yeah.
Mitch, you've visited like 10 countries since we last recorded an episode.
I can't really remember any of them.
We have both gone to Singapore, so we could talk about Singapore.
Yeah, so I did a pop-up, a week's worth of lunches and dinners at Black Wattle in Singapore, which is Clayton's sister restaurant, where Clayton Wells from Automata and soon to be A1.
The everyman's back, everybody.
And where my sous chef Lil currently works, and Clayton's old sous chef Yuri.
She's still your sous chef, is she? Forever.
Yeah, forever. She's, you know, part of the family. So that was sort of backed by Citibank. So they flew me over and we did a week of collaboration stuff. And then I sort of just hung out there and, you know, sent Lil to the hawker markets every time I got hungry to bring me back something to eat, and caught up with all the guys in Singapore. We had some good friends happened to be in town from overseas at the same time. So, yeah, it was really good. Singapore's really good eating, man.
Singapore's fucking incredible. Yeah. I went there with my family in January, and we chose that as a destination just because it's a shorter flight. It's a one. There's no, you know, you don't have to stop over in Singapore to get to Singapore like almost every other place in Asia.
Yeah.
I knew it would be like a pretty easy one to push two prams around in.
Yeah.
And it totally was.
Yeah.
Like, no shortage of fun family things to do. A relatively small area to visit. So we were there for like a week and a half. And man, the eating there
is so good.
The hawker food, and I know that's like a buzzword that gets thrown around, especially if you've never visited a hawker market. Like, you know, you only see it where it's like a, you know, lackluster Malaysian restaurant proclaiming to be hawker food in like, you know, capital city of Australia, and it's kind of like, oh, this is not that interesting.
Yeah.
But you know, if you've not been to Singapore, it is these like it's basically like a food court, but these tiny spaces, there's up to...
Basically, the government built places for all the street vendors to have storefronts in.
Mm.
So, everything is clean and organized and sort of backed and supported by the government. So, all these guys can be in one place, surviving and keeping that sort of culture alive.
And there are hundreds of hawker markets in Singapore, each of them containing from like 30... stalls too. I mean, the biggest one in Chinatown is like, there's well over 200 stalls within there. I mean, they're not all open at the same time. There's some breakfast kind of thing, some lunch, some dinner,
late night.
And the makeup of cultures in Singapore and the food related to those cultures is just like, it's so diverse and incredible and cheap. Like,
yeah, stupid cheap.
So cheap.
Well, the hawker stores are stupid cheap, yeah.
But then you've also got this, like, you know, because a majority of the people that live in Singapore from Western culture work in banking and finance. Mm. And investments and that kind of thing. So there is also a huge amount of high-end dining and hotel stuff as well.
There's a lot of restaurants in Singapore.
So how did you divide up your time in Singapore?
Well, this trip, because I was mostly working and at the restaurant, so I sort of, like I said, I just sent Lil out to get hawker food because Blackwattle's pretty central to like Maxwell Center, and then there's another hawker center sort of just around the corner. So it's all pretty centralized, so Lil could just duck out and go and find me something to eat that I hadn't had the previous day. And I'd sort of been lucky enough that I'd been in Cambodia the month before and took a couple of days to go over to Singapore to see Lil before this dinner was organized. So I'd sort of already been there and went and ate at Burnt Ends and, you know, did a couple of the restaurant-y things already. So this time I just sort of just wanted to eat hawker food. And then, you know, I went and had a drink at Burnt Ends with Dave and just caught up with everybody and that kind of thing. And Clayton and I went and ate at Cheek by Jowl after service one night.
What's that joint?
That's another one of Peng's group, the Unlisted Collection.
Which is the same backer of Clayton's restaurants?
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of Australian. Rishi, the chef, used to work at Tetsuya's. So it's sort of just around the corner from Blackwattle and Meatsmith. And it's really good, man. Just like super tasty. I had one of the best desserts I've had in a long time. This black olive and strawberry number. Oh. It was fucking dope. And it was just good. Like, Singapore's kind of like Sydney in the fact that the community is really good of chefs.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone hangs out. And if someone's in town, everyone will hang out and
yeah, that's cool.
bump into each other and all that kind of thing. So it was more about that. And then spent a couple of nights at Le Bon Funk, which is a new place that's just open. Run by a guy named Kieran, who's Dave Pint's old sous chef.
Yep.
And that was really cool. Natural wine bar kind of vibe, snacky food, late night. And that was really sick. I really enjoyed it. So it was a good time. It was tiring because I haven't done five doubles in God knows how long. I haven't worked a Monday. I haven't worked a Monday in God knows how long. And not that I was really working, but I didn't know what fucking day. I was like, what? Like, doing a Monday, like, just really threw me off. So,
sure.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
But your favorite dish in Singapore is, it's not noodles, it's not rice, it's not the kind of, like, you know, what you think of straight away when you think of the cuisine that you can find in Singapore. It's smoked chicken wings, right?
Yeah, the chicken wings are so fucking good. They're top three chicken wings in the world.
So, these chicken machines are smoked using this crazy device that I've only ever seen in Singapore. Have you seen it? That's like that weird, like, conveyor belt-esque kind of
control. Nah, this is different.
Okay, the one I went to, like, similar. They looked exactly the same as the ones you got, but it was like, smoked. The wings were on this conveyor belt, and they kind of like circled over the coals and then up through the smoke.
Okay. That's a mechanic version of how this is done. So the place I go to is in East Lagoon Village Hawker Center, which is sort of on the way back out to the airport. And it's been in the family, I think, for 70 odd years. So the grandfather owned it. The son now owns it. So the son and the mum work. And now, so he's now the dad, and the son is there working as well. And it's the same sort of thing as this charcoal pit. And all the wings are skewered by three big metal prongs. And there's like 10 or 12 wings on each prong, and they're marinated and basted. And then the guys physically move them down over the coals, then back up into the smoke, never letting it catch fire. And then they're served with calamansi, the juiciest fucking calamansis I've ever seen. They're so good.
It's a little citrus.
Little kumquat sort of thing. And then like a fermented garlic and chili sauce.
Mm-hmm.
They're so fucking good, man. And then being idiots.
Yeah, I saw this picture.
Lil and Yuri will buy caviar through their supplier at the restaurant. So we'll take caviar.
Like the most high-end caviar you can get.
Take caviar to the hawker center. So it's real high-low.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Totally.
And, man, it's fucking good.
Yeah.
It's really fucking good.
Chicken wings and caviar. Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah, I couldn't believe just the extent of... Like, I would get hooked on eating the same dish at all the hawker centers as well, just because I was like, I've got to find the right one. And even like things like... It's like rojak it's like that weird raw salad of like apple and celery and this black sweet sauce through it. I was obsessed with that. The cuisine there is so good.
Yeah.
And just how many of those hawker centers there are scattered. Like, you know, it's one of those like you could go, every single center has at least one place that you should visit. Thanks, Cam. Hey, Cam Fairbairn from Acme, you want to make a quick little cameo? It's been a while.
Guys, great to be back. Just drop some tea off to Mitch and Levs. Have a great day.
Hey, listen to much good Ethiopian jazz lately, Cam?
Oh, fuck, don't get him started. Fucking hell.
Thanks, Cam. And one whole thing that, you know, that is like one of those dishes that you always hear talked about when people go to Singapore that I've never actually eaten before. I was like, how good could it be? Is black pepper crab.
Yeah, right.
I had it about five times while I was there. Yeah. And just the level of depth to that weirdly sweet, really rich black pepper sauce that is
Did you go to JB Ameng?
Is that one in Engseng?
I have no idea where it is.
Yeah, that was could be anywhere. But yeah, I went to one place that was like a kind of almost like a, it looked like a chain restaurant, but it was a one of its own kind of flight. Like, so it was like the kind of sit down dinner thing. And then I went to another place that was just filled with like young families and cabbies, basically.
Did you go to Sinhai Sao as well?
I don't know.
And had the chili crab and the salted egg.
I liked black pepper crab so much that I didn't even have the chili crab, but it's definitely a place that I want to return to. It was so good.
It was good. So I'm going back for a couple of days.
Oh, God damn.
In July next month as well.
Oh, that's so jealous.
Yeah.
Yeah, my friend Tommy and Vicky, they were just there on the way to the Little Nom Dom Club Koh Samui podcast festival.
Yeah.
And they've just sent them so many places to go eat at. I think they ate a ton of crab too.
Yeah. So yeah, and then next month, or at the end of this month, on the 25th, I go to Copenhagen and do a couple of nights at Slurp Ramen in Copenhagen. And then on the 1st of July, I go over to London and then I'm doing a dinner at the Laughing Heart in East London.
Yep.
And then I come back and stop in Singapore for a couple of days and then come home again.
That's great.
So, yeah.
And how was Cambodia the second
Cambodia
time around?
Was sick, bro. So good. So Soph and I went back over the Easter break.
We did a Cambodian episode with our friend Sophia Thatch last year. One of the last episodes we recorded. Thatch.
Yeah.
That's why.
She's going to get mad. So we went back. Originally, she was going to go with her family and stuff, but they sort of pulled out. So I was like, I kind of needed a holiday. So I was like, let's go anyway. And just, fuck, ate everything again. It's so fucking good. And then ducked across to Singapore for a couple of days. And it was good, man.
So we're talking a lot about traveling and eating to travel. And the person that inspired me to do that in the first place when I was younger is a man who I'm sure everyone is familiar with called Anthony Bourdain. And this weekend is past. We all learned the very sad news that Bourdain took his own life shortly after filming an episode of his latest series. I have never seen a bigger outpouring of just everyone I know in my life sharing what that man meant to them.
That was the crazy thing. Like, to a number, every single person in the industry, he meant the same thing to. He was such a big influence. But what's really amazing is his legacy outside of the industry for people in all kinds of walks of life and all kinds of industries, finding that way in and that inspiration and that understanding through him and his shows and books and all that kind of stuff. Like, the reach that he had is incredible.
So you shared a story online about actually meeting him randomly many years ago with your business partner Thomas Lim.
I think Jamie Doom was there as well, and there was somebody else with us that I can't remember.
Duke Bistro
was.
Crew in the States, was it?
Yeah, in LA. Yeah. So it was, I think me and Limbo had just done a pop-up in London and we'd flown across to LA, and I think Doom had come and met us, and we'd been at the Chateau Marmont for a drink, and we're walking somewhere and we're walking up the back past the Chateau Marmont, and we'd walk past the car and somebody was getting out of the car, and I wasn't really paying attention. I just had my head in the clouds kind of thing, and Limbo was like, fuck, that's Bourdain.
And Limbo, let's get it out there, he's not really someone that you would ever expect to be starstruck by anybody. He plays it cool almost all the time.
Yeah. And he was like, fuck, that's Bourdain. And by the time we'd sort of all come to the realization and we're like, fuck, that's Bourdain, fuck. We were sort of halfway down the street and Limbo turned back around and was like, Anthony, you're a legend, bro, fucking la la la. And he was like, you know, sort of said hi. So we sort of wandered back to him and we're like, you know, shook his hand and said, fuck, it's so good to meet you, you know, can we get a picture? And Bourdain was not really interested in being the famous guy taking pictures with anyone, and I sort of said, you know, when I read the post online, I sort of said that whether it was wanting us wanting to connect with him in some way or wanting to impress him in some way as young chefs who, you know, someone you look up to and has had such a big influence on you, we said, oh, we're chefs from Australia. And like that, it was like, you know, the sort of wall of being that famous person, having to talk to the public all the time, that kind of thing went down. And he was like, oh, fuck, you chefs, why don't you fucking say so? Let's get a picture, you know, like, and it was like automatically like family, you know. And I think he made everybody feel that way. And there's been a lot of great things written. Eddie Wong wrote an amazing
brilliant
piece.
Article.
There's been some good stuff in the New York Times. The Watch podcast did a little tribute thing, which was really great. And I listened to an old podcast of Andy Greenwald's that I also shared on Facebook of an interview with Bourdain. And yeah, like he even sort of says like the TV shows weren't always great, but they were honest and open. And
we've definitely made fun of episodes and tropes that he fell into in the past.
Yeah, but they never looked down on anyone. They never looked down on any culture or anything. They were always trying to understand a culture and celebrate it and that kind of thing. And that's something really different, and that a lot of people have sort of tried to copy that, but Bourdain is always the apex.
Yeah, the most common message, you know? I saw, particularly from, I mean, only from Asian writers and Asian Twitter users, was that he was the only like food writer or food TV show host that did that wrote or visited Asian countries as an outsider with the utmost respect for everything. It wasn't like, oh my god, look at these ridiculous ways these people do things over here. It was just with so much respect and admiration for the culture, and always, you know, represented what was best about the places he was visiting.
Yeah, it's like, and there were some like just amazing episodes of his shows over the years. Like, I know the Vietnam app was massive to you.
Yeah, I saw that. That's the first episode of his. I'd seen episodes here or there, but never really paid too much attention. And in 2008 or 9 or whatever, what got aired, I saw the Vietnam episode he did. And I bought flights to Vietnam like within a week of watching that episode. It was just this most amazing, joyous celebration of, like, first of all, like, he found the most incredible street food while he was there, and they were always my favorite episodes, which was him getting out of the restaurants and into the street and like meeting hawkers and meeting people that didn't necessarily get covered by mainstream press, and really, like, you know, being in awe of the food that they were creating.
Yeah, and I know Soph sort of feels the same way about the Cambodia episode.
That's a great episode
as well. And you know, like, the one that sticks out the most for me in my memory is the episode with the Joe Beef guys.
Oh yeah,
it's
in New York.
No. It's Quebec, I think.
Oh, right, sure.
Yeah, it's Quebec. And it's just him and the Joe Beef guys just having a fucking ball, basically. Right. You know, just being gluttons, doing what they love. Like, one of the Joe Beef guys loves fucking trains, so they go on this train trip that he fucking loves doing, but they bring caviar and foie gras and all this stuff and just be gluttons and talk shit. And then, you know, like, they're just... And just the love and the passion and the joy and the honesty of it comes through. And that's sort of... That's why it resonates with me, because that's how I feel eating with friends, you know, or going to a friend's restaurant or going to a shitty restaurant, or when we all used to come to my house on a Sunday arvo and cook, sit around and talk shit and listen to rap music, you know, like, that feeling, to capture that on TV is so hard to do. So yeah, it's pretty crazy.
There was a great episode about the old New York.
Yeah,
and he went to like one of the last red sauce Italian spots, and then I remember the episode ended with him like talking to newer guys, so like the Palm guys, and like the changing the idea of importing Italian ingredients to the ethos of cooking locally, which is like that, or like, you know, like sourcing locally.
It's still being Italian food but using local ingredients.
That was a great episode. But the Vietnam episode, I've eaten at every single place that he visits in that episode. Like, we based an entire holiday around that, and then like whenever. For years after that, whenever we would, you know, book a holiday somewhere, the first thing we would do would be watch the No Reservations episode about that place and just write down everywhere he went.
And the amazing thing is the amount of people that did that exact same thing.
Mm.
The amount of people that saw that episode or another episode and went, that's our next holiday. Let's go and experience that and be a part of that culture and learn and, you know, experience that. That's,
yeah,
to have that influence across every kind of walk of life is pretty incredible.
And I haven't watched anything he's done for more than 5 years easily.
Yeah, I haven't watched anything in a while either.
But I view him as being so important to, like, in your formative years. Like, I compared it to, we have, if you're outside of Australia, we have a radio station here called Triple J. Mm. And when you're a teenager, when I was a teenager, that was the most important thing in my life. It's a national radio station that plays alternative music with, like, you know, comedians and, you know, left of center hosts. Yeah. And you connect with everyone that's talking to you about this music that you wouldn't hear anywhere else. It's so important. But then you hit a point in your life when you outgrow that and you've moved on beyond that entry to that world.
Yeah.
And I think for, like, that was my teenage years, and the equivalent of that in my 20s is discovering No Reservations and adoration for Anthony Bourdain. And I certainly didn't outgrow him. I guess I just, you know, watched less of that kind of entertainment.
You watch other things, yeah.
Yeah, but I think, I don't think I would have done any of the things that brought my world and your world together
without
watching his television show.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have opened a restaurant. My wife and I wouldn't have started a business together. I wouldn't have become a food writer. I wouldn't have tried to make my own shitty, you know, food videos. And I certainly would have made wouldn't have made a food podcast. There's so many beautiful tributes to Bourdain, and it's so tragic that he's not going to be continuing to make specials or, you know, writing more. There's brilliant articles that he's done in the past as well.
It just goes to show that, you know, mental illness doesn't discriminate. You know, no matter who you are or where you are in life and what station you are in life, it doesn't fucking discriminate. And, you know, like, there's been a lot of, if you need to talk to people, like, if you need to talk to someone, reach out and all that kind of stuff, but it's not always easy to do.
No, totally.
When you're in a hard place,
there is a stigma about even calling that number, you know, like that, admitting that something is wrong.
But it's not always the person who is in a funk or suffering from depression. It's not always their place to call out. Like, it's our places, friends, and, you know, to reach out and to be there. And, you know, even if there's a bit of pushback, that little bit helps, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even if they're, you know, some people don't show the symptoms at all, but, you know, it's important, like, have this, try and maintain this relationship with your friends and tell them how important they are to you. You're important to me, Mitch.
Thanks, bro. You're important to me.
but look, I was pretty gutted.
Yeah, me too.
At first when it happened, I was just like, you know, like, oh no. And then just thinking about it more and more.
Yeah.
How important he was to so many people in our circle. And for it to happen so, you know, like less than a year after Jez as well. Like, you know, the
it's another, another blow.
Fucking media reporting. Like, I hate that I opened this talking about this by saying that he took his own life. But I wish, you know, like, just don't tell us in the headline.
Yeah. We don't need all the details.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is not important.
There is the argument that by reporting that part of it, you are creating awareness that is a problem. But yeah, I wish there was a better way to, you know, I mean, Katie Spade earlier in the week as well, with horrible press surrounding that too. Yeah. And look, it's a difficult subject to approach.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, it's not all about selling fucking papers or magazines, is it?
No, totally. Yeah. So definitely make sure you read as much Bourdain as you can if you're feeling bad, because that was the one thing, like, as sad as I felt, watching the things that he's made and reading articles that he's written made me, brings joy. And all of the, you know, I know a lot of people hate the insincerity that comes with, like, posting, oh my God, RIP this person that died. Yeah. But, like, God, the outpouring of love for this man made me, like, it was pretty powerful to read.
Yeah, really powerful.
So, Mitch, when we last recorded an episode of The Mitchin, I should look at, see what it even was, but we were in a pretty okay place. I mean, I guess we weren't loving doing the weekly format. The last episode we did was with Mike Eggett, called Pop Ups. Hilariously, I think he's opened and closed two restaurants since that last episode.
Only two, probably 17.
Yeah. And, you know, we should give a Mike update. Mike is, for the first time since I've ever known him, having a break at the moment. He went up north. He's not cooking in a restaurant. That's someone that needed R&R more than anyone, anyone I know.
Yeah.
So, good decision, Mike. Take that break. You deserve it. So shortly, you know, when we last recorded, you had Acme, which we're recording at right now, and you and your partners from Acme had Bar Brose as well, which was a bar in Darlinghurst, Sydney. Shortly after we recorded that last episode, you made the decision to close Bar Brose down.
I think we were going through that process when we did that last episode, and that's kind of the reason I wanted to take a little break is because I didn't really want to talk about it. And some things, obviously, you can't talk about.
Sure.
For a variety of reasons, you know, you don't want things to get to the press the wrong way, or you don't want things to get to suppliers the wrong way, or your staff the wrong way, and that kind of thing. So, you know, and on top of that, it's not an easy thing coming to the decision to have to close the business. So I didn't want to avoid talking about it on the Mitchin, and I didn't want to pretend like everything was cool. And
because there is this pressure on you to kind of pretend like you're killing it.
Yeah, 100%. Like I've sort of said it before that none of us as chefs know how to fail. Like, you get to a position of being a head chef.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
For a business owner, because you've succeeded in whatever you've been trying to do, like your end goal is always to become a head chef or to open a restaurant. And if you've got to that point, then you've succeeded, you know, and maybe some of us fail upwards, but I feel like I was successful in my career. I built a reputation, you know, I haven't felt like I've failed anything since math in the HSC in year 12. And even then I knew I was going to fail it before I took the test because I didn't know fucking study, you know. But we're all egotistical and driven and passionate and all that, those kind of fucking cliched words. But to come to the realization that something you've done isn't working or isn't successful, and to admit that you failed is hard. And to then have to tell people that you failed and try and explain it or validate why or whatever the case may be, which isn't always a fucking black and white answer, is hard to do, you know. And like you said, you don't want to be out there going, fuck, we're really struggling. You know, no one wants to go to a struggling restaurant.
Because the idea of it is contagious as well. Like, if people know that this one's struggling, that means the next one is going to struggle too.
Or let's not go there because everyone's down and, you know, like the vibe's not very good and, you know, that kind of thing. And you have to protect your staff and keep your staff morale up and all that kind of stuff too, because it's everyone's livelihood, you know. You're employing people. You're providing their wage to live on, you know what I mean? So you're providing your suppliers wage to live on basically as well. And to have that stress of, fuck, you know, how are we going to pay these people? Are we going to survive? Are we going to survive it personally? What's going to happen to Acme? You know, all that kind of shit. It's really fucking tough. And people deal with it in different ways. And that can be fucking tough to deal with too, you know? So it was a hard year and a half of running that business. And it's been a hard year since closing it. You know, we've had a lot of changes here at Acme as well. It's just Cam and I now.
Just Ack.
Just...
No, wait, come.
Come.
Just come.
Yeah, just come, basically. So, yeah, but I also don't think it's something we should just sweep under the rug either, because if we don't talk about it, then the pattern is going to... For other people... You know, we're not the first people to fail. We won't be the fucking last, you know? So... If we can talk about it, and now we sort of can't, you know, but obviously there's like legal reasons and all that kind of shit at the time and that kind of thing that you can't always talk about. But now that we've been through it and we're continuing to work to make sure all our suppliers are paid and staff are paid and all that kind of shit, like, I think it is important that we talk about it, because it's not always roses in the industry. And as much as, you know, you want to talk to your friends and go, yeah, the fucking restaurant's busy, like, sometimes they're not, you know, and you're not the only one going through that. And it's the same sort of thing. Like, if we can talk about it, then we're not suffering through it ourselves and dealing with the stress and depression and self-doubt and everything that comes with that. So I think it's important that we talk about it. And there's been times since closing, like when Jezza passed, and, you know, now when Bourdain passed, where I've thought it's even more important too. But I also don't want to seem selfish about it either. And, you know, I've written things down for myself, and I think I've showed you a couple of things that I've written. And, you know, like, you have to get it out.
Yeah,
out of your system. And you need to talk about it.
Definitely.
You know, but it's still hard to do, you know. Like, I'd love to write a piece, but at the same time, I don't know if I want to write something for a publication that I feel wasn't supportive through the process and is just looking for clicks or whatever the case may be, you know? So it's kind of hard to work out how to put something out there and to have that conversation, you know? So obviously this is one way, and I hope a lot of people listen to it. And, you know, Cam and I sort of spoke about it at Grow Assembly last month, and that was sort of the first time we spoke about it publicly. So yeah, I don't know, it's tough, man. Business is tough.
Yeah,
hospitality in Sydney is fucking tough.
Yeah, there is that weird dream of, like, you know, once you get the first restaurant going, then you just open a second, and because you've done it before, it's even easier.
Yeah. But and I didn't open a second business to lose a bunch of fucking money. My thinking was, cool, Acme's successful, we're making a good living, we're running a good business, let's open another one and have two and make twice as much money. And that's the aim and that's the idea, but it's not always the reality, you know. And the irony of it is, learning the very expensive lessons we learn at Brose is probably saved Acme,
right? Sure.
You know, because we weren't actually good business people, we weren't running Acme well. We had our heads up our bums. We had some bad advice. We had a variety of different things. You know, we weren't aware of we didn't pay enough attention to how much industry had changed, all these kinds of things. So the irony of losing Brose has mean that we've probably kept Acme. And now we are good business people. We run Acme efficiently and properly. So it's...
And the food's never been more inventive and more you, I think, as well.
Yeah, and I actually feel that too.
Yeah.
I feel like the food we've been doing for maybe the last year is really fucking strong and creative and tasty and interesting and all those things that I want it to be. And then at the same time, I feel like we're not getting recognition for it. You know what I mean? Like, we've been here for 3.5 years...
there's a lot going on in
people
Sydney.
People take it for granted.
Yeah, people, you know, always caught up in the new thing. It's hard to keep your voice out there, you know. Like, and everyone's in the same boat. You know, everyone is trying to do something different or something to set themselves apart. And eventually it just becomes white noise as well because everyone's trying to do something, you know. So it's tough, man. But like I've always said, you know, if we believe in the product we're putting out and we're proud of it and we can stand behind it, then that's all we can do. And hopefully people respond to that and we get bums on seats and we can stay in business. Yeah,
but going back to what you were saying, like, I think there definitely should be, you know, more messaging out there that, you know, it's okay to fail and
yeah.
to not, it's not always your fault when something that you, no. that you're running fails either.
Yeah. I mean, like, we definitely have our share of responsibility. All of us that were involved, we have our share of responsibility but that's not the only reason that business failed, you know? So it's hard, like I said, we won't be the first. Like, I've heard Neil Perry talk about it multiple times, and he's lost more restaurants than I've worked at in my career, you know what I mean? And he's a fucking very successful chef and businessman, you know? So, and it's the same in any field, you know what I mean? Like, people go bankrupt and come back and become millionaires, and, you know, like, it's tough. It's tough to run a fucking business. The government doesn't make it easy. The council doesn't make it easy.
No, there's so many things you're going up against. You know, yeah.
Yeah. So don't do it if you're thinking about it.
The lowest I ever was when I was working, you know, six days and nights a week at my restaurant. And then every spare moment I would take gigs. Like, I'd go straight from the restaurant to the club. And then I would put that money that I was making from DJing back into paying my staff's wages.
Yeah.
Because the restaurant wasn't making enough money to support all the staff we had on to replace my wife, who just had a baby.
Yeah, and that's the thing, man. You know, like, and then growing apart from business partners.
Mm.
And, you know, like, Andy and I are really good. You know, it was difficult at the time with Andy moved on halfway through last year and Ed finished up at the end of last year, and they were both difficult things to go through, but I think we're all in better places for it now. And, you know, like you said before, you start with something and you sort of go through a growing phase, and then you can grow apart and have different visions and different ideals, and that's okay too. But to have a business go under, lose two business partners here at Acme, still have to deal with the fallout of losing a business while trying to keep this one on the up and up. And, you know, like, it's fucking hard, bro. It's fucking hard. And I've been in some dark places too, you know, like, not to trivialize.
No, of course not.
Anything, but when you have tax bills and suppliers to pay and staff to pay and, you know, you got to worry about all that shit, it can be fucking stressful.
And then to know that once you've dealt with that, you then have to go and work at a restaurant that isn't doing what you want it to be doing and is the cause of these problems.
Yeah.
And you've still got to be there. And
you know, like, I'm not in that place. Like, I haven't had a kid where I want to be somewhere else. Like, Acme is the place that I love.
That's
you
important.
Know, I fucking love it.
Mm.
It's everything that I worked for. I had no idea when I started cooking. I had no idea how I was going to get here. I still don't even really know how I did get here.
I remember when you told me about it. It was such a joyous moment because you know, even like I came into your life relatively late in your journey to this point. You were already doing pretty well when I met you. I think it was just before you started working at Duke. But I, like, just the joy in your voice when you told me that you were opening your own spot finally.
Mm.
Such a good moment.
Yeah, and I still love it, you know, like, I love coming here every day. I love creating stuff. I love coming out with new dishes. But the reality of running a business in Sydney in 2018, and I'm sure, you know, the older generation will say it was fucking harder in my day or whatever the case may be, but the reality of all of that takes away from that creativity and joy, and, you know, like, finding that balance is tough.
Running your own business always has been and has never been easy, but I feel like in this day and age, every week something new is introduced that you have to work around or the different restrictions and
the adding
taxes
of
and
delivery services, the sort of dumbing down of the industry, I think, as well, you know.
Not to mention competition, constant competition, because now no one goes to nightclubs anymore, and food and bars is like kind of what the generation that used to go to clubs, that's now
the only thing
they go and do. So
the lockout laws have just killed culture in Sydney, and you don't think about the effect that that has. You know, people aren't going out as much anymore.
Like, I will go to, even if it's a successful party now I did a dip pop up.
Yeah.
I brought my restaurant back for one night because it meant that I could just, now because I have a cookbook out already, I just submit my recipes to the kitchen. They do all the prep. I show them how, I show them what they should look like, and then they do all the cooking. So that was a great, great team. Shout out to Tom and Mark over at Harper and Harry for doing a great job. And then, I also booked went from like 5 p.m. till 3 a.m. And I booked all my best mates. You know, we had Joyride, who does the Mitchin theme song, the award-winning Mitchin theme song. Our friend Shanson, Ness, Leon Smith was there, Mowgli May. It was a great lineup. And at one point, it was just completely crammed in there. And this is not like the bottom level of Harper and Harry is not really associated with being a nightclub, really. But it was, you couldn't move. It was so packed. And I was like, wow, this is so good. It's so good to have such a nice, big,
that
packed
feeling,
party. But now I looked around, I'm like, no one here is like under 26.
Yeah, it was all our friends.
Exactly, yeah. But like, you know, and that in itself is a rarity because, you know, those people are getting older and they don't really go out as much as they used to. But I don't know where teenagers go anymore. Yeah. And it's crazy. Like what little contact I have with people that age, they stay at home. They save their money up and they go to the festivals instead of going to nightclubs and seeking out new things at night. There is this weird stigma against like being out late at night in Sydney. And that's entirely the fault of the way that the lockouts are portrayed in media and by the government. And we're 10 years away from that being undone.
Yeah, that's like the laws could change tomorrow, but the effects won't change for a long fucking time.
And I know we spent so many episodes last year talking about it. I guess part of me thought that, you know, we were going to contribute to it being undone, but the point of no return is here. And now I've just kind of, like, I know it seems really negative, but like I get invited to talk about on panels about the lockout laws and their effects and stuff like that. But I don't have the energy for that anymore. Yeah. I put in so much in those first 2 years and the lead up to it actually happening. And I just feel like my voice, it wasn't that it wasn't heard. It was that the right people didn't want to hear it.
Yeah.
And it was clear that the priority,
what the message
exactly,
is, they're not interested in hearing it. Yeah.
No one, put any money into my campaign of "Don't be a fuckwit, Sydney," which I think was an incredible campaign. I wanted to change the Coke sign, so instead of saying "Enjoy Coke," it just said "Don't be a fuckwit," and that was what greeted you when you went to King's Cross. I think that would have made a massive impact. I think there's been a lot of shitty things that have happened to both the food industry and just the nightlife industry in Sydney. And I think it's
and
really,
everything
really,
that relates to that.
And I think this podcast definitely suffered from just feeling the full brunt of that. And it, like, it's so easy just to be like, this is shit, this is shit, this is shit. And
not a fun thing to do.
No,
like,
totally. Yeah.
Everyone might know me or tease me about fucking being grumpy and old and shit, but I don't want to be negative. You know what I mean? Like, but sometimes you're in that space and you can't get out of it. You know?
All my other podcasts are essentially about escapism, you know, video games, comic books, music. But I loved that this was, you know, there are some episodes that we've done that I think are incredible conversations, even not about food, just like, you know, conversations about.
Yeah, and like, man, I've had some fucking great times doing this.
And I would love to try and, you know, even if we don't commit to a schedule of some kind, if there are moments where we have time to do episodes, if it's just us or if we have a guest or two again, or, you know, like some of my favorite moments is just pulling the recorder out when everyone was drunk and recording some messy conversation. I did not like editing it, but I liked it at the time. I would love to continue this with a new emphasis on talking about real things realistically, but not trying to dwell on the
just
negativity. You know, maybe people listening didn't get that out of our
maybe
podcast.
Who knows,
people, you know, a lot of people,
I've had people say they loved it, and people overseas say it was their only insight to what was happening back home in the industry and that kind of thing. So, you know,
Yeah, but there was also
just
like,
don't hold us to a fucking schedule, I guess.
And also a lot of people like really like no one really tells me what they expect for me to do on any of my other podcasts. But like Lee Tran Lam, who hosts The Unbearable Lightness of Being Hungry, and shouts to her, she's kept her podcast going for a lot longer than we have.
Yeah.
She told me that like she actually gets more feedback for the Mitchin than she does for her own podcast. Yeah. Like a lot of everyone has their ideas of what they want out of this podcast. And the truth is, you know, we don't really want to know. We don't know what we want this podcast to be.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah. It's, when we started, we just wanted it to be basically a recording of the conversations that we would have anyway.
Yeah. I would love to,
you know, and that's hard to do because we talk a lot of shit and you say things in private that you maybe don't want people to hear publicly or, you know. But that's what in its essence it should be, an honest conversation with people in the industry that's not clouded by a third party publication.
Sure.
So to speak. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And just us shooting the shit.
The candidness of the Mitchin, I think, is our strongest point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So look, we will try and do more. But if we don't hold it against us.
Yeah.
It's not because we don't want to do it. It's just, I don't know.
We're lazy. We've got fucking other things to do.
Fucking lazy. We've just spent an entire episode explaining how not lazy we are. Definitely make sure you head to Acme. Mitch, you mentioned being proud of some of the dishes that you've been doing lately. You want to go through a few of your favorites?
No, I hate doing that. I mean, we change the menu a lot.
Yeah. There's a simplicity though
that's
come through in recent dishes. Like you used to if you go through your menus a few years ago, you know it would be like 5 to 6 items listed one after the other per dish. And lately, you've been putting things up that are like two things.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Like, but then you eat them, and the depth is anything but just two.
Yeah,
two
I
things,
think we've sort of just simplified and cleared up. You know, we're really seasonal. And, you know, the menu has a structure that we work to. But I think I've just found a nice rhythm with it of, you know, and that's probably because I'm not distracted by other shit as much.
Sure.
In a way, even though I am. Like, and we do have a lot of shit to deal with and going on. And
yeah. But you love this place, so it's okay. Yeah,
you know, and like,
this is
being creative is, that's the whole point. You know, this is my creative outlet. You know, I can't play an instrument. I can't DJ. I can't sing.
Anyone can DJ,
I can't fucking do anything else.
15 minutes, I'll teach you how to do it.
I don't know if I'm coordinated enough.
I'm certainly less coordinated than you.
You know, but this is my creative outlet, you know? So, and it's still the joy of feeding people. You know, that's what it's about at the end of the day. Like, it's still the joy of having people come here and us looking after them. And we still get that. Like, we still get a lot of people that have never been here before or haven't been in a couple of years and have come back. And I think the service team that we have now is really great. The personalities we have on the floor are really great. The vibe and the fun of the restaurant is really good. The food is really good. And people leave here happy. Mm. And that makes me happy, you know? Like, it's hospitality after all, you know? And that's what we want to do. We want people to come in and have a good time, eat something that exceeds their expectations or taste things they've never tasted before and have that experience walking away and just have had a really fun time being out and experiencing this small part of the industry.
Yeah, cool. What Jats have you got on at the moment? At least tell
me that. At the moment, it's... Jats a la Mark Best.
So Mitch does, he's got the Jats partnership,
it's
the
like,
most,
everyone's like,
so jealous of his Jats partnership.
It's like a little signature series that we do to just sort of shout out our friends and
also your love of Jats. What was the first Jats at Acme? Was Acme the first place you did Jats at, or was it?
Yeah.
So Jats are the quintessential Australian cracker.
Yeah. I just did like a take on cabanossi and cheese, basically.
Right.
We just did a salami cheese and mustard butter and pickled radish.
And the right people were just like, yep, this is a fucking great little canapé, great little taste.
Exactly.
And then the wrong people were like,
oh, that's so lazy. What, fucking just put a thing on a jar? That's fucking hell.
But you just, you owned it. And you pushed
through. I admit
it, man.
Yeah. Yeah, like, we're about taking the piss and having fun. And that's, and nostalgia and that kind of shit. So, but we're actually going to take the Jats off and do something different with them.
Vita Wheats.
Next week. No. Like, still using Jats, but...
Saladas.
No, don't slander me, bro. Yeah, so we're going to take the Jats off as a Jats and do something else with it next week. So stay tuned to Instagram.
But yeah, so what's on the Jats a la Mark Fest?
Cucumber, cream cheese miso, and arugula. So that's a little play on a thing Bessie's been doing recently, where he does like little cucumber, hollowed out cucumber, fills them up with cream cheese miso, and puts scampi caviar on top.
So good.
But we can't afford scampi caviar, so we use arugula.
Where's he cooking at the moment?
Nowhere.
Nowhere.
He's got a thing on a cruise liner, and then he's an ambassador for AEG cooking products. And, I don't know, he just cons people into paying him to do gigs, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, good on him.
Aspirational.
Yeah.
I have a monthly column in Good Food in the Sydney Morning Herald, which is really cool, working with... Arden Burnoff, who's my favorite editor ever, but she moved to Melbourne, and so I also work with Rosalind Grundy down there, who's also really good to work for as well. And basically, they've just appointed me the ambassador for Western Sydney, which is fucking great.
Which is what you've been aiming for last 2 years. Yeah.
And in fact, because of that, I've now got two things happening with Discover Parramatta,
cool.
which is like the Western Sydney kind of like, you know, tourism thing. So I'm going to start writing for them as well.
Great.
And essentially, it's just highlighting my favorite. You know, smaller restaurants out that way, and hopefully my aim is that I want to be known as like the guy that you should get in contact with if you have an event, or if you are putting together like a refurbishment on like a massive shopping center there, and you like, you know, we need someone to curate which restaurants we need bringing to Parramatta, because we're lacking so many things. Like, you know, we have such an amazing community of like Thai people there, and there's no Thai eateries and stuff like that. Like and we have like, I wrote a tirade about how much I hate Parramatta's Eat Street in the Herald a while ago.
Trash.
It's the worst. It's a street that you would just never eat on, and it's called Eat Street. Besides, it's the only Messina in Sydney that you don't have to line up for.
Yeah,
that's good. But yeah, I want to get to the point where I'm bringing the good shit to Parramatta, and also trying to highlight the good things there's a few good things in that area that are already there. But then beyond that, like, it's great writing about my favorite places in Auburn and Harris Park. I wrote about my favorite Thai place at the moment is Khao Pla, which is the Pla who used to work for Hongi, and before that Spice IAM. He opened a few years ago in Chatswood. And Khao Pla is awesome. Like, you know, you sit down on stools and the food is just like so fun. It's, you know, like, it's very, very like fun sharing Thai street food that doesn't hold back on the spice, but is also like really, really presentable to everybody. And he just opened up his second spot, which is inside Macquarie Shopping Centre. And that's
right.
That's where I went and saw movies when I was a kid. Yeah. And like, you know, like.
Is the ice rink still in there?
Yeah. I got the ice rink. Yeah. We did ice skating with my high school there for one term every year. But like the most interesting place to eat there when I was younger was like fucking Alibaba.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can have like some of Sydney's best Thai in like this like really, it's like high end. Like, no, it's like this little restaurant inside the shopping center.
Right,
it's really, really good.
Yeah, right.
So it's fun highlighting places like that. And now people that are opening like new Jian noodle spots are getting in touch. Like, hey, come eat at my place. So that's a good place to be. I'm also in charge of doing the Cheap Eats Guide and the Good Food Guide this year, which I've been spending way too much time deliberating on, but I'm pretty proud of the list that I'm about to submit next week.
Cool.
Just like...
That's a lot of work. That's a big guide.
Well, no, it's only 20. I wanted the big guide. I wanted it because it used to be 50, but now it's only 20.
Right. Okay.
But you'll get a sneak peek of that because I'm doing the cover story in Good Food next month related to that.
Cool.
Yeah. Also, I'm 17 kilos lighter than when I last recorded an episode of The Mitchin.
I think that's been the biggest change from you scoffing at anyone doing any form of physical activity to now you being the fucking stereotypical F45 cult dude. I think that's the biggest change.
Who's worse, me or Hongi?
You might be worse.
Really?
But Hongi's worse on Instagram.
How am I? Oh, you're just in, because I don't actually eat like I used to. Is that
You're worse in person. Because you're like, bro, I went to F45. I'm so good. I smashed my protein shake, la, la, la. And, you know, oh, fuck, there's an F45 van. I'm fucking this and that. And Hongi would just put fucking pictures of dripping sweat on his face on Instagram. You know what I mean? But Hongi's still so terrible at Instagram.
Something's never changed, Mitch.
Something's never changed. But yeah, but just you going from, hey, Levs, I went to Pilates last week. Who the fuck did you go to Pilates for, you fucking dickhead? I went to Body Pump. I fucking... that's the... the biggest, most unexpected life change ever.
Who saw that coming? Yeah. Actually, that may have contributed to me not wanting to do the Mitchin anymore, because I started dieting and then we would just talk about food all the time. But I'm at a point now where I'm pretty happy with
how you got to find that balance again.
Yeah.
Life's all about balance.
Totally. Yeah. But I've just finished a challenge, and I think I put on more muscle in the last 8 weeks.
Yeah. See, that's what Hongi was like, man, Levs is crazy with that shit. Every challenge, he does every challenge. Like, I never do a challenge. Levs does every fucking challenge.
I'm obsessed with getting the body scans, because you find out like the percentage of body fat and like how much muscle you put on in the last few weeks.
Bro, you're in a good place. You don't have to dwell on that shit. You're healthy.
I'm not dwelling. I have goals. I have eventual goals.
You're healthy. You're fit. You still got to be able to come in. Like, bro, the fact that you're eating my restaurant maybe once every... you've probably eaten here once since we last recorded. Like,
twice. Definitely twice.
You worried about too much.
I don't eat here because you open at 6 and my kids need to go to bed by 6:30. That's the main reason. I brought both kids here.
I blame your parenting, not F45 then.
I brought both kids here. No, you saw what happened. They were like, it was a great first half hour, and then they went insane. And like both of them...
Yeah, and I blame you as the parent. I'm not blaming the child.
For bringing them
here. I blame you as the parent. For making your child's bedtime 6:30.
Oh, right. Sure. Yeah, sure.
You should be training them to be going to bed at 7:30.
Yeah, you've got to contribute to the nightlife by keeping your kids up all night from an early age.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then,
I'm pretty sure Nami and Omar don't go to bed till fucking 1 a.m.
Well, look, thank you so much for listening to this episode. This is
so much
fun to talk, do a Mitchin.
Yeah, it was good.
I missed it too, for sure. And we may do one again in the future. If you want to, suggest something that you would like us to do in the show, at worst, we'll read out your email and make fun of it on the next episode.
Yeah.
The Mitchin Podcast.
I do miss doing that, actually.
@gmail.com. Say something really stupid so we can make fun of it. I was like, fuck, I haven't checked this email address in like 6 months. I can't wait to see, all the people begging us to come back. And it was just all spam. The Mitchin Podcast @gmail.com. Of course, you can follow... Mitch on Instagram @Instakrill if you want to see the dishes that he doesn't want to talk about. You love taking photos of him.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Putting them up.
There's some good stuff there.
Yeah.
@Instakrill.
It's important to show people what we're doing.
I'm @levdog, LEVDAWG. No posts of anywhere near as much food, but I've got a few weeks.
You want to see some F45 DJing clips and stuff? And then follow Levs, yeah.
And mostly the pictures of the kids that I'm a terrible parent of.
Yeah.
@LevDog. This week, the Mitchin is coming out during a week that I'm putting out an episode of my podcast every day.
Different podcast every day.
So this will be
5 for 5.
This will be next Tuesday, I think.
Nice.
So it'll be Serious Issues Monday.
Nice.
Mitchin Tuesday.
Someone give this man some money to start a fucking podcast network.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
What's next? I think it's All the Small Games on Wednesday. Hey Fam Thursday, and Friday is an all Neptunes episode of my podcast, All Raps.
Listen to that,
which is fucking great. So
like to be a guest on that podcast sometimes.
That's a great idea. Yeah, okay, cool. That'd be fun. Mitch and Old Raps called Old Mitch.
Though it probably would pretty much just be this Neptunes episode, really.
No, that would be fun. That would be a good way to make that podcast, because it's really difficult getting in the frame of mind to do something by myself, because I'm so used to collaborating with someone.
Yeah.
But check me out everywhere next week.
Yeah.
Nice. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next time, whenever that is.
Peace.
Eat at Acme.
Eat everywhere.
Yeah, stop, that's a very good home. Point.
Just because it's winter, put a fucking jumper on, go out and eat in restaurants.
Eat everywhere and tell everybody about how good the food you ate was. Encourage that in this industry to thrive.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.
It's the Mitchin Podcast with Krill Dog and Andy.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.